Back in on Canuck Central, it's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. We're in the Mobile Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? We are here at Rogers Arena, and they are doing dress rehearsal for the pregame. So if you hear some opera in the background, you know that they are prepping for tonight's opening face-off. Let's bring in our next guest. He is Canucks Insider. It is Irfan Ghaffar, joins us every Tuesday here on Canucks Central. What's happening, Irf?
What's going on, fellas? Game day. Beautiful day. I saw, Dan, you were out for a walk today. I saw that post there.
Yeah, took a little walk over to the rink. You know, man, why not? You know, it's not January 13th and there's like all kinds of rain happening, and you can just walk over the bridge and have a nice, beautiful walk over the False Creek seawall and get here in a nice 20-minute brisk walk. It's beautiful.
If the Leafs lose tonight, yeah. The Jets lose tonight, the Canucks win. Then Edmonton wins. Who becomes Canada's team?
It'll probably be...
It's a serious question to have to ask.
Probably Winnipeg?
No, if Winnipeg loses too.
Oh, if Winnipeg loses, it'll
so
be Vancouver.
So just Vancouver and Edmonton are remaining.
Yeah. Probably, I think Vancouver would get a bit more love than Edmonton.
You think so?
I think so.
No, I think people will be in on Connor McDavid. Like, let's see McDavid get a cup. Yay.
Yeah, I don't know.
You don't think so?
But I'm think not sure. More people would enjoy Edmonton losing across the nation than Vancouver winning.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah,
it's just funny.
They get a kick out of it.
These are the upstart Canucks. It's not like 2011 where everybody's gonna hate on the Canucks.
It's true.
So you reported it today. Artur Shilov's getting the start, and I know the coach hasn't yet confirmed it, saying it's a game-time decision, but, you know, everything they did at morning skate, although they tried to mask it as best they could, seems to point towards exactly what you reported, that Artur Shilov is going to get the start. Were you surprised at the news?
A little bit. I thought that if Casey DeSmith was okay to be the E-bug in game four, then, you know, a couple of travel day and then, you know, a day off kind of, and then you get back into it. He probably was going to be the guy, but I mean, look, it's be real here, guys. Canucks are playing with house money. They're up 3-1, right? And Shilov didn't play bad. You know, he got them the win. He's been kind of a calming influence every time he's in net for Vancouver. So with these things, you know, the goalies usually find out the day before. Right, they're usually in the know. Unless something wildly changes here over the course of the next little bit, the Canucks are preparing, and everyone should prepare to see Artur Shilov lead the Canucks onto the ice to play Game 5 here in Vancouver, a chance to punch their ticket to the next round. I don't really have a problem with it. I think that they could have gone either way. And what's another extra day of rest for Casey DeSmith? We know with the lower body injury. The fact that Rick Tocchet said it was a lower body injury and then said he's good to go if he can back up kind of just led me to believe that they were going to start Shilov anyways. You say what the injury is, and then you say, okay, if he's good to go, he could back up. So that's probably why Shilov is going to start, I think. But why not? I mean, you have a 3-1 lead. He played well. You got the win. Doesn't matter how it came and how many minutes it took or was left in the game, but you were able to go and get the win. And, you know, you have your chance to go and punch your ticket to the next round.
Do you think they're more confident internally in Shilov's?
I think that there's some people in the organization that might value him a little bit higher than Casey DeSmith for sure, right? I think that his progression and the way that he's played and just the insane year that he's had, like, this guy's got all the confidence in the world, right? Like, he gets Latvia, his first ever medal at the World Championships. He was the MVP of the tournament. Right? He played so well, and he's having a good year. You know, he ends up making the start for the Vancouver Canucks, gets his NHL debut, and then or plays in the NHL again, and ends up playing well. I just think that from a Canucks standpoint, you look at it and say, you know, he definitely could be our guy here, not only this season, you know, if he is going to be the backup and play some games, but obviously, you know, as the years go on here.
I mean, I get it. The intrigue of it all, and it is a great story that the Canucks have won three games with three different goalies in this series.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of people in our text box that are like, start Tolopilo and do the first thing ever, you know, like four different goalies to win four different games.
It's like Canucks fans are heat checking on goalies.
Like Canucks fans just want the Dion Waiters heat check. That's that's all that they want right now.
We can win with this guy too.
But to be honest, like, the goalie doesn't matter for this team. Like, whether it's DeSmith or it's Shilovs, they're not giving Nashville much. For as much of the puck that Nashville has had over the last two games, they still didn't generate that many chances. Didn't even generate more chances than the Canucks, even with all the puck that they had. So, I mean, when you defend as well as the Canucks do, I don't know if the goaltender really makes that big of a difference either way.
Now, the Canucks are up 3-1 in this series, and they haven't played all that. Like, they haven't played a great hockey game. I think we can all sit here and agree.
I would
they
say they haven't
great hockey.
They haven't played well on both sides of the puck, but defensively they've been as good as they've been all season.
100%. And I think that when you look at it, it's dumbing it down a little bit, right? It's, you know, you don't have your number one guy. Now you don't have your number one and your number two guy in net, right? So if he can see it, he's probably going to stop it. I mean, he made 27 saves, again, 30 shots against him, three goals in that game. But I think that, you know, other than the one goal, he's probably going to want to have back. You can't really fault him on it. And even Casey DeSmith in the games that he's played, but the goals that he's let in, you can't really fault him too much on some of those. So you got to credit their team defense, right? I mean, it was something late in the season that we looked at and said, their attention to detail here is very good. And I think that they've definitely gotten back to some of that, especially when the structure in their game, and we talked so much about it ad nauseum, about Rick talking structure and how good he is at that, and they're actually buying what he's selling and doing the things that he wants them to do. And now it's proving dividends, right? I mean, three different goalies, three different wins, and again, you're one win away from the next round.
Well, and I think, you know, just zooming out big picture for a moment, heading into next season, like, what if you're feeling this confident in Shilovs, restarting him in back-to-back games in a playoff series, isn't that already foretold that he'll be the backup next season?
Right? I mean, how do you not? And I think at that point, too, it's cost management as well. You're not needing to pay a guy, right? You know, you're not paying a guy that Casey DeSmith type of money, or a guy even more money to be your backup. But if you're this confident, you know, in a guy like Shilovs to be able to go and get the job done in the playoffs, you know, when you're back at home and you know, you have the series lead where you probably could have went to your number two guy to be your number one guy, you're going to go to the three guy to be the one guy now.
It's it is an interesting development with Shilovs going again today, but I'd have to agree. You know, you're looking at next season and Shilovs as the backup with the way that he's played and how he's progressed to this point of his career. On another note, Brock Besser up to four goals, has the hat trick in the last game. They don't get to overtime without Brock Besser. We know that much. I think there was a little bit of a question of how Brock would perform in the playoffs. I mean, just like there is for Pettersson and Hughes, we just, outside of the bubble, we haven't seen it from these guys yet. And Brock has answered the bell and then some as far as being a playoff performer.
Well, I think the piece that, you know, Ian McIntyre wrote was fascinating, right? Where Brock says, you know, you can't just be a regular season guy. You got to go and prove it in the playoffs. And he's doing that and more, right? Him and JT Miller are leading the way. He's got 6 points. JT's got 6 points. Brock's got five. Each of them, you know, playing in a big part in the reason why this team is winning hockey games, right? They've showed up every single night in the playoffs. You know, every single night in the regular season, they're there more often than not either. So when you look at it, credit to Brock Besser. I mean, look, everyone thinks that he might be going through something. I think that, you know, there's no secret that a lot of these guys are battling through something. It is the playoffs, so definitely bound to happen. But I think the biggest thing when you look at Brock is the way that he's scoring his goals, right? They're all, other than the first goal is kind of the open net, you know, top of the circle there. He gets the puck and has a shot. But the other two, in tight, right? He's getting beat up a bit. He's going to the areas where not a lot of players like to go. He's kind of changing his game a bit from the Brock Besser that we knew in year one when he scored 29 goals. And that wrist shot was absolutely nuclear. And there were so many things that, you know, went so well for him. But 16 goals on the power play, a lot of them came from being right in front of the net and getting himself into those positions. And the guys, to be completely honest, I think his hands are underrated. Underrated for the most part. In tight, he kind of hits the back of the side of the net. And he gets the puck again, is able to swing it out and score. I mean, that's a very skillful play from a guy that's a 40-goal scorer.
Well, and the coach has really lauded his hockey IQ, talks about how smart he is and how he understands the play of the game. And now he's really showing that IQ with how he's scoring goals. And it makes you kind of wonder, like, I don't know what the organization is going to do with him long term, because it's going to be a huge number, right? But in terms of him being a sustainable goal scorer, if he's able to show the IQ he is, you know, kind of getting, hiding in the play, lurking in the corners and popping out, becoming open and scoring and pouncing on opportunities like that, if he has a nose for the net, so to speak, and you can, you know, combine that with his ability to score with his shot as well, like, is he a guy that can sustainably score 30 plus goals every year?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's already scored 40 and he scored 29, so I think that it's the evolution of his game, I think, is the biggest thing. You mentioned Rick Tocchet mentioning his hockey IQ. I think that's a part of it, right? He's getting smarter. Maybe he's realizing that he's not the guy that can blast the puck into the back of the net every single game and every single night. You know, things change. Injuries happen. They also change the way that you go about how you approach your craft. But the way that he prepared this offseason, the way that he came into this season being ready to go and go at anything that was thrown his way, for him to get 30, you know, we were all saying, wow. Then he gets 40, and now he's being a big-time player performer for them in the playoffs, is obviously kudos to Besser.
Not that I want to be that guy that brings up contract talk in the middle of a playoff series, but I'm going to be that guy that brings up contract talk in the middle of a playoff series. For as much
as I did it after game one, I did it after game one with Dakota Joshua, and I got ripped. So let's do it.
We could only last so long without it, but you know, as it was all Petey all the time this year. It's going to be a lot of Filip Hronek once this playoff series is done, or whenever the Canucks are out, and however long this goes, but. Is Besser's contract not going to be the season long storyline we look ahead to next year as a pending unrestricted come the summer of 2025? I mean, with the way that he's played, he just scored 40 goals. Now he's showing he can score in the playoffs. I mean, that's going to be a big time contract that the Canucks will have to figure out at some point over the next 12-14 months.
Dan, the Canucks are one win away from going to the next round, and really, you want to talk about the Besser? No, I'm kidding. I totally get it. I think that it's going to be interesting, right? I mean, there's no... it's very clear that Brock Besser wants to remain a Vancouver Canuck. I mean, he's definitely, you know, setting up his kind of his roots here, but, you know, the economics of it, and financially, and what he's going to be worth, and what his agent's going to be looking for a 40-goal scorer, a guy that's pretty dependent on for this team, a guy that has some great chemistry with JT Miller, who's going to be here long-term as well, a guy that can play really in your top two lines, both those positions, with Elias Pettersson or JT Miller.
The front office has never been, like, super committal on Besser, right? Like, about when they signed Pettersson, it's like, well, or... When they made Hughes the captain, like, this solidifies our core. It's Hughes, Pettersson, Demko, and JT. You know, Brock was not a part of that conversation. Now he's scored 40 goals and he's playing well in the playoffs. Does that change? I think that's kind of what I'm curious to figure out from this front office, is how much has Brock's play this year maybe changed the direction of his future?
Well, I think his play will dictate kind of, from his agent standpoint, about how much money he thinks he's going to be worth, right?
Yeah,
and I think from a Canucks standpoint is, can you find another one? Are you going to be able to find another Brock Besser, or is this someone that you're going to have to commit to? Even Elias Lindholm, right? Is there going to be some conversations there if he goes and has a wild playoff and keeps playing the way that he has?
Tocchet would give him $7 million tomorrow, I feel like.
Lindholm? Yeah, probably.
So? Yeah.
Tocchet would.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation to have when you look at this team, right? There's a lot of players. I mean, look, every game we're going to sit here, and if there's a different hero, everyone's ready to give them the bag. You know, Dakota Joshua, people are willing to pay him no matter what, everything. Brock Besser, people are going to be willing to pay him no matter what's going to be everything. So if someone comes out and has a really, really good game tonight, like much like Elias Lindholm did, being the hero as well, people are going to be ready to pay their guys. But, I mean, this is why you play the games. This is why we're in the playoffs. These are all positive storylines surrounding this team, who are, again, one win away from round two.
Well, and the other thing to keep in mind too is, like, especially now with 32 teams in the league, and who knows if, you know, another team or two pops up, it's going to be really difficult for you to find players too. I mean, look at the free agent market this year. like it's Stamkos if he gets to free agency, and it's Jake Guentzel, and that's pretty much the list. And then you're talking about guys like Jason Zucker, for instance, who's looked good here for the Nashville Predators, but like it's not this long list of available players either.
But Zucker's not like another top six forward, right? He's another guy like the ones you already have. They kind of fit in your middle six. You can slot him in here, slot him in there.
And so like I'm all for being cutthroat in these situations, right? And like, you know, moving a player at his high and then replacing him. I just wonder internally if they, to the point you guys are making about how well he's played, how he's scoring goals, the coach buys into how he's doing and everything, that they value him enough that they don't want to lose a guy that can score 30 to 40 goals, because it's not as easy to replace those guys as it may seem. Like right now, the Canucks need to add more goal scorers, and if you remove Besser, that means you have to add somebody else. And again, I can have that conversation, but I just wonder organizationally, how do you go about that?
He's making $6.65 million, right now. You pay him 7 times 5?
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to win off
a 40-goal season, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Brock goes out and scores 25-30 next year. Yeah. And then it's a big-time different conversation. But I think if you take a hard look at it and you're the organization this summer, depending on what happens the rest of these playoffs, right? I mean, you Canucks play well, say you advance in this round and, you know, you go to 7 games in the next round, or you maybe make it to the conference final and Brock's a really, really big part of that, then I think the conversation does change a little bit. But, you know, he played well last game and we'll see. Everyone's ready to have the conversation about him. So let's see what happens tonight. Guys that I'm really worried about tonight or kind of want to see more from are Roenick, Hoglander, and McKayev a little bit. McKayev really hasn't shown up a lot this season and of late, but Nils Hoglander, he scored 24 goals this season.
Yeah.
I mean, where's really he been? Those three are a combined minus 6.
Yeah.
And really haven't done too much.
Well, it comes down to Pettersson, right? Like, I don't, for as good as Hoglander was all season, I still don't know if I expect a ton out of him. And I mean, McKayev scored one goal the last 50 games of the season, so it's kind of hard to expect much out of that. But when Elias Pettersson is still without a goal in this series, I know, you know, as we've talked about really since All-Star break, is there something there that he's dealing with, that he's been managing through the course of the season? Probably, but bottom line is, not just to get through this series, but if you're going to have any chance against probably the Edmonton Oilers, you're going to need more out of number 40.
He's got 2 points. He's minus 3. He's got 4 shots on net through 4 games. Brock Besser has 11. JT Miller has 10. Right, Pia Suter has 8. Like, it's almost inconceivable to think that he isn't battling something right now. I know Rick Tocchet said that maybe he's thinking a little bit too much of the game and maybe he is in his own head a little bit when it comes to things, but we haven't seen the shot. I haven't seen the shot since the All-Star game. And it's cool if you can score against the Buffalo Sabres and the Anaheim Mighty Ducks and teams like that, but your team, I know right now they have a series lead and things are looking pretty, so you can kind of mask it a little bit. But even if they win and if they go through, people in the organization, the fan base is still going to wonder what the hell is happening with Elias Pettersson.
Well, I mean, I have made the point yesterday. I've been making the point recently. I'm done predicting when his arrival is going to be. I hope it happens. Like, there's a difference between believing in the player long term and thinking he's going to be worth it and figure it out, and is he going to deliver now in the short term? The great thing is, if the Canucks win tonight, even if Pettersson doesn't play well, at least it buys you more time for him to find his game. That's pretty much what you can hope for at the best case scenario at this point.
Yeah, but Sat, when you looked at it this season, you knew they were going to be in the playoffs. Like, it was just about where they were going to finish. So the last 3 weeks of the season, like, what is he doing? Like, in all reality, like, how are you trying to get yourself ready to be in the best possible, your best possible form when your team is going to need you the most? He's a very good hockey player. He's an elite hockey player when he's on his game, when he's doing the dangles, when he's doing the deeks, when he has that confidence, when the puck's going through his legs and he's beating guys, when he's up at the top of the circle ripping that shot. He's passing the puck into guys' skates and looking at them and doing it. You know, it's a confidence thing. It's an overthinking thing. Maybe it's an injury thing, but, you know, he had that maintenance day and, you know, he didn't practice. But before that Anaheim day game, the afternoon game here in Vancouver, a lot of people thought that he wasn't going to play that game, but he ends up playing. And then there was a thought that he might not play against the Winnipeg Jets, but obviously he did play. Rick Tocchet decided to rest some other players. But I just wonder, like, it's almost impossible to think that he isn't going through something right now.
I don't know if it changes the conversation for me all that much. Like, you know, JT throws 150 hits a year. Is he not going through something? Brock Besser was almost going to be held out of the game that he ended up scoring his 40th of the season, and he has still managed to have success. We've seen how much Quinn Hughes has been hurting with the beating that he's taken from the Nashville Predators. Still makes a big play there on the tying goal in order to help this team win that game four. You know, like, it's the Stanley Cup playoffs. You got to be able to play through injuries, you know, and that's – ultimately, yeah, you're playing through something, but as long as you're on the ice, you're going to get criticized if you're not living up to
it. Let me ask you both. I mean, we've sat here and watched and talked about this player ad nauseum in the regular season, okay? The regular season ends. So
his last two goals were against Arizona and Buffalo. Like, he hasn't scored against a playoff team since March 9th.
And one of the teams doesn't exist anymore. So, you talk about it, but, like, what was the expectation for us on this player that a magical switch was going to be turned on or something? Like, I don't think that's what, like, that's where I don't get where people are talking about Elias Pettersson and we're criticizing his game, and I get it. There's seriously something going on there. But it's been happening for so long, so I don't know where this narrative of he was going to magically find it in the playoffs was going to come from when he hasn't been playing well for so long. It was clearly an issue.
Yeah, it's true, but we haven't seen a signature game either that can maybe be that type of catalyst, because we've seen those games from him where he, like, has a big game and then he gets rolling for a few games. Like, it's going to come eventually. Again, the question is, does it happen in this playoffs or does it happen next season? But we've seen that from him before. Like, even in, you know, a few years ago when he struggled the first 30 games and then all of a sudden found his game. Like, it's there. Can you just get that out of him?
I really hope for his sake he goes and has one, because I think confidence can go a long, long way. If he scores, just see the puck go into the back of the net. If it's a power play goal, if it's a shot, it's something like that. And I also hope that it is for our case and for the fan base's point of view, right? Because no one wants to see this. Like, no one wants to see a player struggling as hard as he is, because eventually they're going to need him. So is it going to be tonight? I mean, you'd like to think so, because the roof on that building would absolutely blow off if Elias Pettersson, you know, goes and has a two-goal performance in it, and it looks like old Petey.
We haven't seen old Petey since really that January stretch where he was one of the three stars of the month leading into the All-Star break. Irv, always appreciate it. Thanks for the insights. We'll talk soon.
All right, gentlemen. Be well.
There he is, Irv Von Dafar, Canucks insider, joining us here on Canucks Central. Canucks playoff coverage is brought to you by Sky Avenue Kitchen and Lounge. Discover Surrey's newest luxury dining experience. Experience the richness of Canadian cuisine prepared by a Michelin-recommended chef. Reserve your table today at skyavenue.com. Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah coming up next. Darren Pang is going to join us. TNT color analyst is on the call for Game 4. He'll join us next on Canucks Central. We are back in the Mobile Kintec studio. Canucks and Nashville Predators, T-minus about 2 hours or so here at the rink, with the Canucks up 3-1 in the series. The building likely to be on fire tonight, just as it was for games 1 and 2 here in Vancouver. Canucks trying to end this series tonight without having to take that long flight back to Nashville for a potential game 6 on Friday. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Let's bring in our next guest. It is TNT color analyst. It is Darren Pang. Thanks for this, Panger. How are you?
Yeah, my pleasure. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing pretty well. It's been a wild time here in Vancouver with the Canucks back in the playoffs. You know, first playoff games here in Vancouver outside of the Edmonton bubble in 2021. You know, it's been 9 years, and the fans have been up for it. The team's been up for it as well. What have you made of this series with the Canucks up 3-1 to this point?
Well, that's a great question, because you know, I thought the last game, I thought it was the most remarkable comeback I've ever seen for a team that didn't play very well.
Yeah.
And I'll stick by that. I mean, let's face it, it's not exactly the way Rick Tocchet wants his group to play or the way that the players wanted to play. But in saying that, if you do it two games in a row where you can barely get 20 shots on goal, the other team must be doing something pretty darn good. And I credit Nashville for, you know, the way they really took a lot of the middle of the ice out of the hands, and they forced Vancouver and have forced them to go board to board. But the one thing that Vancouver is very good at is going board to board, wing to wing, separating the defensive team with that kind of play. So, I mean, I think all in all, there's still areas of improvement for Vancouver in this game if they want to tackle down Nashville and finish off the series.
Yeah, and I think the big thing with the Canucks has been they haven't won enough battles in this series as well. And you mentioned there's certain things the coach doesn't like. And, you know, given the type of player Rick Tocchet was and what he talks about being the staples to the game that he wants to see this team play, it's really coming up with those battles, because I think the biggest edge maybe Nashville's had is their overall effort level and intensity and that want and desire for the puck.
Well, yeah, they're even during the regular season, I felt like they were one of the strongest, you know, basically checking the puck back teams. And if you know what that means, you're in 50-50 battles, you're on the boards, they win stick battles. They're heavy on sticks. And you know, by and large, the top line for Vancouver is very good that way as well, led by JT Miller. But they're not getting the same kind of board wins on the other lines. And so I think Nashville, from the first four lines, wins a lot more battles consistently than what Vancouver does. So, yeah, I mean, you want to win the series, you win the big boy battles. And even though that I haven't felt like the last two games that Vancouver's won those battles, as you well know, they've come up with a win. One with 12 shots and that last game that was a miraculous come-from-behind win.
Yeah, and, you know, I get it. There's a lot of people that think Nashville should at the very least, be even in this series with the way that the run of play has gone on the ice. But, you know, one thing, Panger, I feel for as much of the puck as they've had in these last two games, they've really struggled to get some grade A chances on Vancouver's netminders. For as much as the Canucks haven't had their entire game really together, their D-zone coverage has been on point.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I think the checking and defending has been very good. Even if you're going back to even defending on Nashville ice, Casey DeSmith made so many really good saves in game number three, but not high volume, not highly tested. And, Vancouver's chances, although not a whole lot of them, they have been a lot of great A chances too. So that's something to look at as well for this game.
What are you seeing from the way Nashville, obviously being very physical on Quinn Hughes, but how effective do you think they've been in trying to limit the Canucks' young defender?
Oh, I thought they were great in game four, to be honest with you. I thought he was hanging on by a thread. And every time he went to the bench, you guys were watching it on Sportsnet, and we had it on TNT. It's like we had a camera on him all the time. It was like, whoa, they're getting a piece out of him. They're getting a chunk out of him. They're getting, you know, Steve Ott, well, he was the assistant coach in St. Louis. He always said to me, he said, Panger, you got to get some skin. Every single shift, you got to get some skin. I don't care if it's a shoulder, an elbow, a shin pad, or a toe. You got to get something. And I think that's where they've done a really good job, honestly, against Quinn.
Yeah, and, you know, Quinn, he took some big ones. And it's not like it's any really one guy. You know, a lot of our listeners and, hey, hockey fans, you know, they want to see a response. Our captain's getting crushed out there. Who's gonna stand up to him, or who's going to stand up to some of these predators that are taking runs at our guy? But ultimately, like, that's just going to keep happening. The only way for the Canucks to stop that from happening is to be able to move the puck out of their own end a little bit more, spend a little bit more time in the offensive zone, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think people that think that somebody's got to go at them, some teams are built for that and some teams aren't built for that. I think that, getting the puck out of your own zone quicker is essential. In game number three, I remember getting ready for the game and talking to Rick Tocchet, and he said, I don't want these guys going D to D to D to D. He says, we're dragging us down and the forwards are getting frustrated. We want to get it up north. Now, in saying that, I have noticed that, you know, Nashville's forwards will push back the D Nashville's forwards have done a good job in the neutral zone of taking away any kind of stretch direct pass. So what I found in game number four early in the game was that even Tyler Myers brought the puck up the ice early. Hold on. Zadorov, obviously Quinn Hughes does. Hronek did. But I thought they led the charge in the first period, and that's why they had a really good first period. And I thought they stopped in the second period and didn't do it as well in the third either. So I would expect the D to be a little bit more north, skating the puck out of their own zone, skating the puck through the neutral zone in this game five here tonight.
One player who's been under a lot of scrutiny in Vancouver is Elias Pettersson, and especially after signing that massive contract extension a few months back. And, you know, yeah, he did picked up a couple assists on the road in Nashville and played a part in the game-tying goal late. But what have you seen in Elias Pettersson's game, and what do you think might be lacking?
I haven't seen very much. I mean, I'm not going to pile on here. I think at ice level for two games, I see a whole team trying. But I truly thought from my level on the ice in the neutral zone, which I stare at, is a lack of power in his blades, lack of power in his skating. He couldn't get away from anybody. So whether that's Nashville really checking him hard, or that's an area in the off season that Elias Pettersson has to work on, and that's foot speed and strength and power. Getting away from the opponent, separating yourself from the opponent to be able to make a play or two plays besides being on the power play is going to be essential for Elias Pettersson, in my opinion. He's obviously a talented player, but in this series, I haven't seen the puck on his stick a whole lot for him to make those kind of plays that he's capable of making. So again, those are things that I think he's got to improve on. Regular season, I think you can get away with it. I think in the playoffs, you have to be more powerful. You have to be, you know, you have to have that next step, and you have to get away from people, and then you've got to have the skill level that he has, but I haven't yet seen it here in this playoff series. And again, not piling on, but that's just the way I see it from my ice level.
No, and you know, I don't think there's going to be too many of us that disagree at this point. You know, he's got 0 goals in the series, right? He had over 30, had over 100 points last season. He's really going through it, and I think, you know, you see, there's a crisis of confidence at times. Almost it feels like, at least when we've watched him, and that little bit of hesitation. You're right. It gets exploited so much more in the playoffs when time and space is just at such an incredible premium in the playoffs. And I think, you know, having that little bit of hesitation in his game, that lack of conviction is just really, it's really giving him a tough time.
Well, I mean, you look at, you know, I'm just going to make two players. I mean, one of them drives the offense in JT Miller, and it's very apparent at ice level. I can hear by his skates, by the power in his stride, I can hear when one player is coming my way, and I know it's JT Miller. I mean, it's him. He's powerful. He goes north. He plays hard. He goes through people. Now, they're different players. I get all that. And Elias doesn't drive the offense through the neutral zone the same way that JT Miller does. But one thing that JT does well is when he gets the puck off his stick, and he moves it to somebody. He moves it to Besser. He might move it to the left side in Suter. Most times, because he just moves it ahead. And when he moves it ahead, he goes to another area. Now, is he a whole lot faster than Elias Pettersson? I don't know. Does Elias Pettersson need different wingers? I don't know. I'm not sure. But I do know that when you hold on to the puck for a split second long, they're going to check you. And so for me, it'd be like, you want to be faster? Move the puck faster and go to give and goes. Gretzky and Curry weren't the fastest players in the world, but man, did they ever use give and goes an awful lot and made themselves look really fast, besides being really great, I should add.
Well, yeah, and I mean, in terms of JT Miller, yes, he was an all-star. He had 100 points and one of the league leaders in scoring, but it still feels like he might be underrated across the league, doesn't it?
For sure. Until you watch players that play against him, and then you look over to the other bench and guys are just like, man, it's hard to stop that guy. It's just hard because he's powerful. He goes through people. When he doesn't have the puck, he checks through people. Mm-hmm. He makes an impact with or without the puck. And again, going back to other players, it's hard to compare him to certain players because I believe he's one of the best power forwards in the league because of that reason. He doesn't avoid contact. He doesn't fly by. He goes through you, and he takes a piece of you. And so every single shift, when you play that way, it's hard to play that way. But he does that. So underappreciated, I would say, in, you know, I would say a little bit. I think the people that play against JT Miller for sure appreciate how good he is. Maybe the fans don't quite see it that way. I'm not sure. But if they're just watching the game, you know that he's a darn good one.
Yeah, 12, 14 months ago, there was a very different feeling around JT Miller than there is right now here in this market. I do want to get your thought on the Canucks goaltending situation. Thatcher Demko goes down. Casey DeSmith comes in. He plays pretty well for games 2 and 3, and then, surprise, he goes down with an injury. The kid Artur Shilovs comes in, and now he's going to get another game with Casey DeSmith likely backing him up tonight. What did you see in Artur Shilovs that allowed him to have success in that game four?
I thought his position was good. I watched a number of clips from his nine games previously.
Yeah,
and I saw him at times. I think the term that goalie coaches use and whatever is chasing the puck a little bit. I mean, a little bit over aggressive on where the puck is and the puck carrier. But I didn't see that at all. I'm not at all in game four. He was tested on the wings. I thought that Van actually, took away the middle of the ice fairly well. So anytime you start your NHL career and you get shots from the dots, you're feeling pretty good about it. But I was waiting to see if he went over top of his or overlapped his near post. He didn't do that. I was looking to see if he was going to be swimming with any plays down low behind the net, because Nashville's very good at that. But he didn't. And I think that Nashville will try to go back to that a little bit better in this one. So this could be a bigger test of jams, wraparounds, 5-foot slot plays, goal line to slot to, like in game number 3 where Ryan O'Reilly had a number of chances on Casey DeSmith. So this might be a bit of a different animal. It will allow Nashville, keep in mind, to spend a little bit more time in doing their research and in doing their video clips. After one game, after facing Shilovs for one game.
Darren, before I let you go, you mentioned that you sit right between the benches on ice level when you're calling the games, and I was watching you and Catherine Tappan on Back to You talk about the game and recapping it, and you told a pretty good story about Brock Besser and Kiefer Sherwood going back and forth on the benches. I mean, you hear some great jabs going back and forth, but can you kind of walk us through what happened with Sherwood and Besser for our listeners and kind of the stuff that you do get to hear in these series? Yeah.
Yeah, and I try not to share anything real personal because I'll get somebody in trouble, and I'm not into that. But there was some, Kiefer doesn't, he doesn't back down, nor does he shut up on that bench. McCarron, their whole fourth line is really good. I mean, McCarron the same way. They just go back and forth, and I'm just glad to be in the middle of it, to be quite honest with you. And Dakota Joshua, not afraid to go back. Connor Garland, not so much, but they, because he's smaller, they always pinpoint the smaller guys. I know that. But there's Zadorov's always going back and forth. Well, Kiefer was doing what he does. He just, I can hear it out of my, my right ears right there. And I'm like, wow, he's going, he's just going on somebody, you're brutally, whatever it might be, And then I'm looking at the closest guy to me on the left, which are the forwards for that period. Brock Besser, and he's kind of got his stick old school. Like, he's kind of almost got his chin on the board, kind of watching. It's still during commercial break, and then he kind of looks over to his right, which now he's facing kind of me and Kiefer, and Kiefer just saw him and just gave it to him again. And I was watching Brock Besser's face, and it was almost like he looked at me. He kind of had his his right eyebrow up, like, huh. Like, kind of like, what did I do here? I'm just watching the guy. And then Kiefer said something else to him, and Brock just simply said, well, I'm good at hockey, though, aren't I? And that was in response to everything that Kiefer was giving him. I'm not sure if Kiefer went back at him than that, or if he could hear him, because Brock said it so slow. But I'm thinking to myself all game long, and I said it to Catherine Tappan between periods. I said, oh, man, that was the funniest thing. And I said, the greatest answer ever. Well, I'm good at hockey, though. I love Brock. He's quiet, unassuming, great guy. And just for him to say that and kind of look at me with his right eyebrow kind of hinged up there was kind of funny during a course of a pretty intense game.
Yeah, and then he puts a hat trick on them as well. So he got the best of all the worlds. Panger, really appreciate the time and the insights. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks for this.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Have a good game tonight. See ya.
There he is, Darren Pang. He is analyst for NHL on TNT and NBCSN Chicago, and of course co-host of the Back to You show with him and Catherine Tappan. So some good little insights about being in between the benches, where I'm sure he hears a lot of stuff. JT had one chirp that was picked up by the ice level mics that was pretty great. Not really made for radio, but it was pretty great.
No, it was very JT, wasn't it?
It was incredibly JT.
And I could imagine him saying that when he chucks somebody across, just, you know, just like discards guys. My favorite thing with JT is when he just dusts guys and he just like throws them up. My favorite one along the walls this year is probably the one in New York on Keandre Miller.
Like
Keandre Miller is a big, strapping, fleet-footed, strong defenseman. And JT just cut right through him and tossed him like he was nothing.
He can do that.
Yeah.
JT Miller. And he's done it quite a bit. Canucks playoff coverage here on Canucks Central brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Get your keys to an all-star collection of Kubota products at one of their six locations across BC this spring. We've now heard it from somebody outside the market at ice level and just watching Elias Pettersson that closely. A guy who used to play in the league, of course, Darren Pang, NHL goaltender of years past. And another guy that's waiting to see more out of Elias Pettersson. I know it's kind of a broken record set, but it's a massive storyline with the way that Pettersson has not yet performed in these playoffs.
We talk about goaltending and Demko being out, how much that limits the Canucks' upside as a team. And obviously, so far, it hasn't limited their ability in this series. And we wonder if the Canucks do get past Nashville here, how does that stack up against a bigger opponent, better opponent like Edmonton, for instance. And the other portion of it is, if you are going to go beyond one round and win more than one round, you kind of need Pettersson to get going.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, like, I know I'm repeating myself here, but obviously he needs to be better. They need him to be a producer. And the best case scenario at this point is you wrap up the series and you buy yourself enough time for him to find his game at some point in this playoffs.
Yeah.
And hopefully that is in time for a bigger opponent if you're getting past Nashville.
Yeah. And injury or not, you're healthy enough to play. Then you're healthy enough to be critiqued in your game. And that's kind of where it is right now with Elias Pettersson. He's not driving play. And you know, one of the things, for as much as, yes, the Canucks can still do a lot better in terms of not being on their heels as much as they have been in the last two games with the Predators, are you able to do that? Are you able to roll your four lines, play to your identity when one line isn't holding up its end of the bargain? You know, the Lindholm line, they could probably do a little bit better in terms of, you know, keeping the puck up ice or having a little bit more offensive pressure, but they have come up with some big goals and big moments in this series. But outside of the JT Miller line, the Canucks just, they haven't generated enough forward pressure. And if you only have one line going, it's hard to stack shifts on top of each other and get your opponent hemmed into their own end because, well, as soon as that top line goes off the ice, then your momentum's crushed.
Well, and the Canucks have been at their best when they're stringing shifts together and when they're really connected in that. And you see them, how many times have we seen them score goals over the course of the season where they have pressure in the offensive zone and the next line that comes in ends up scoring because they have sustained pressure. They're the ones that are able to really turn it on, and they find the gaps on a defense that's probably been under a lot of duress, and guys get fatigued because they have the continuation the next shift and the next shift after that oftentimes. And that's something that's been missing. We saw it a bit in the first couple games on home ice. I thought the biggest issue the Canucks had in the first couple games, or at least the first game, was they were just so amped up that they over, you know, they were so amped up that they couldn't make the right plays. Yeah. They were carrying play, but at the last movement was a bit rushed or didn't happen quick enough. The second one, similar things where it was also kind of occurring. It was almost like they had too much adrenaline coursing through them. If they can just play with that same intensity but be under more control, they should be able to take more advantage.
The whatever the results have been, the home team has been, I would say, been able to have more of the territorial battle in both of in all four of these games, right? The Canucks, obviously, in game two, they had the 84 shot attempts. Even in game one, they had, despite being down for a large part of it, you know, they end up being on the right side of shot attempts and having more of the puck in that game. Games three and four in Nashville. Nashville was that. Is it going to go the same way tonight where the Canucks find their game a little bit more? Hasn't always meant that, you know, you have more of the puck, you're going to win the game. But I just, you know, I wonder if the Canucks are a little bit more comfortable on home ice here.
Yeah, you would hope so. And, you know, part of it was, would they, you know, be on the run? They won both games on the road, right? So there's only so much you can really critique, right? Like, you know, I know for all the discussion about the Canucks have to be better, they're up 3-1 and they just won two games on the road.
Well,
they
the way that they've critiqued their own game,
yeah,
it pretty much tells the story of they know or they want to be a lot better than they have been, even though they've won three of these four games.
Yeah, and, you know, if you get their best game and that, hey, that bodes well, trends in the right direction if you win game five heading into the next series. But also, it's going to be difficult to take a team out in an elimination game. The elimination games are the toughest ones to win for a reason, because teams, it's literally do or do. You know, we talk about must-win games.
Yeah.
This is a must-win game for Nashville. Like, they're done if they don't win this hockey game.
Yeah.
Those are the toughest games to win, so that's why you need to have your A game. Otherwise, the series may extend beyond five games.
Stan Riccio and Satyar Shah, you're listening to Canucks Central. We're in the Mobile Kintec studio, and we're going to keep it mobile as we head down to the concourse here at Rogers Arena. If you're making your way to the game, do so safely. Try to find us on the concourse, section 111, and we do have some swag to give away as well while supplies last. Of course, they do go pretty quickly when there's 20,000 people in the barn. So we'll see you down there, and we'll hear you next. We're going to get to Rick Tocchet, head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, after the morning skate, and get more into the game as the pre-game show begins on Canucks Central.